Come with me to a place of wondrous contradictions. A place that is silent and unstirring, yet restless and alive. A place of untold peace and boundless dread. Come with me into the very cradle of darkness, where those who dwell alone.
Okay, that's not usually how I'd introduce my home state of Victoria, but this week, that's what we're doing. We're heading out into regional Victoria and we're hearing about the creepy, spooky, mysterious creatures and places that occupy the state.
Oh, well, there's been everything from murders up here to people being run over by timber trams.
In some cases, we've had situations where the sheep's still been warm when the farmers found it's only been there for 15 minutes.
First up, the story of a big cat that can't be tracked.
Now, that's an eastern grey kangaroo skull. What's interesting about it is this animal is not old. It was not old. There's some trauma here on the nasal bones. But you've got no idea what would have killed it. One lives in hopes, but the fact that it's a young animal and it hasn't had a bullet through the skull, it might be the result of some sort of predation. My name's Simon Townsend. I'm a naturalist. I have many, many interests in natural history. This is only one of them, but it's the only one that you would not call well recognised by
conventional science
and by my peers, if you like.
I'm with Simon Townsend. He's a big cat expert, which isn't a big deal, but he's an expert on big cats here in Australia. Big cats in the bush is a myth that's lasted for over 100 years. A number of government studies have been done about them, and hundreds if not thousands of eyewitnesses claim to have seen them over decades in the Grampians and Otway Ranges. But to prove big cats exist, Simon needs a specimen. So today, we're out looking for one.
We're in the watershed of the Anglesey River. I would say 15 kilometres from Anglesey, and possibly 35 kilometres from Geelong. It's a very quiet place. It's weird. It's not true wilderness, but it's remote. No one's ever in here normally, apart from us. Now, our suspicions are that we've actually got a population of black leopards, but that's only suspicions. Nothing's proven until we have specimens.
To understand how it is Simon and I are spending a Saturday afternoon looking at poo, tracks and kangaroo skulls, we have to go back, way back, to how the myth first got started.
Currently the main narrative you'll get around is the story of US servicemen abandoning mascots in the Grampians and so on. But prior to that it was servicemen returning from World War I, prior to that it was circuses, prior to that it was Chinese miners, and then prior to that it's mystery native animals.
And who better to talk to about myths than a folklore expert?
I'm Dr. David Waldron, a lecturer in history and anthropology at Federation University Australia based in Ballarat.
Like any good myth, there's got to be a good origin story. And Australia's got a long history of smuggling in exotic animals. If you want to buy a car, you might check the classifieds. Well, back in the day, it was the same thing if you wanted to buy a tiger cub.
You go through the old classifieds on Trove, for instance, and you'll find lots of stories of, you know, people selling tiger cubs and things at the docks down in Footscray. You could buy tiger cubs at the British Hotel Geelong at one point.
Really?
Yeah. And what it was is people going big game hunting in India and Indonesia, and they kill an adult tiger and they take its cubs and they sell them off as pets in Australia.
We left the elephant country and entered the hunter's paradise. Every animal within the circle was driven toward us. The hunt was on. With this sort of noise, no wonder the animals were on the move.
Oh my gosh, that's horrific.
Yeah, so that's happening, and it's happening quite a lot. The circuses are losing animals, and you can often get stories about, you know, big posse sent out to hunt an escaped tiger or lion or whatever. You can go through the old papers and you'll see, you know, posses of people going out to hunt a tiger. There's a really nice image in the Argus from a puma hunt in St Arnold where Perry Brothers Circus lost a puma, and so they had everyone come out for a hunt, and eventually they shot this poor cat.
And that's not an isolated incident. There's the case of the lioness in Broken Hill, the tiger cub smuggled into Townsville, the leopard scat in Whichelsea, and the paw print in Wombat State Forest. Back in the 70s, Simon had his own big cat experience.
This is July 1973, behind Warburton. One of my mates, he had a cousin who was working as a clearing timber from around what they call the conduit, which is a big pipeline from Miranda Dam. What we'll call, for want of a better terminology, Black Panther came out and challenged him and his workmates out of the scrub. Now, that happens very rarely anywhere in the world, simply because that sized animal doesn't look for confrontation, but that's quite possible. Maybe it had offspring, who knows? Anyway, this fellow got a bit windy and frightened, and they're big, strong bushmen, but they backed off big time. Now, told his cousin, who was my mate, he was the only one of us that had a car at that time, so we went buzzed up there just to have a bit of a look, never expecting to see anything. Anyway, we walked up past the area where they'd been walking and got up to a little plateau. The country's all up and down. And we got to this little plateau and I was in the lead. There was, for all intents and purposes, a Black Panther going from the pipeline towards where the bush was. It was a very good size, much bigger than a Labrador dog. And you could see its shoulder blades going up and down. And very sleek, very muscular. You could see the muscles moving under the skin. The other guys caught up with me and had a quick squiz, and it was gone, straight into the bush. Very long tail, turned up at the end. The next year, though, I was working at Melbourne Zoo, where I had, I won't say experience is the wrong word, I had a lot of exposure to being around big cats all the time. It sort of settled my hash when I examined the black leopards that they had there.
Simon worked as a zookeeper for years, so if anyone knows what to look for, it's him. Right now, though, he wants to prove his hypothesis. And where we are, there's a history of sheep being killed in strange ways.
Especially in wintertime, it's commonplace for quite healthy sheep to be pulled down and killed. The feeding is very specific. But what happens is when they're pulled down, generally they're killed by neck trauma. They're opened up around the diaphragm. And the heart, lungs and liver are removed first. That's the first night. Second night or third night, ribs are sheared off, a lot of meat's taken away from the hindquarters and so on. In some cases we've had situations where the sheep's still been warm when the farmers found it. That's telling you something. It's only been there for 15 minutes.
Out here in the bush, this is a story that feels very real and there's history to it. Here's David again.
One troop ship coming in, customs searched and found 1,650 exotic animals, including bear cubs. And what really pulled the pin on this for the Australian government was in 1942, a ship came into Fremantle and had monkeys that had yellow fever. And they started getting very worried, and I think quite legitimately worried, of people bringing in, you know, foot and mouth disease, rabies, yellow fever, all sorts of exotic diseases into the Australian environment.
Over 1,600 exotic animals on the one ship? It's any wonder we haven't been overrun with leopards. Even if our mystery big cats aren't out there, that hasn't stopped hoaxers from taking up the story themselves and using it for their own gain. David says people used to hide behind the big cat myth to steal sheep from farmers. If everyone's out looking for a big cat, no one's going to notice sheep theft with a two-legged perpetrator.
People use the scare to detract attention from cattle and sheep theft. I've heard anecdotally from police, and this is just an anecdote, but it seems reasonable to me, that this still happens down around Geelong and in Gippsland.
And Simon's had his own experiences with hoaxing.
How do you tell a hoax from something that might be something else?
Well, I don't want to give too much away because I don't want to train hoaxes. But one of the things is...
Yeah, speak broadly.
One of the things about hoaxing is that people are... the evidence is just too good. We've had examples of stuffed toys very carefully placed and photographed, and I won't say how they were photographed, but the photographs actually at first looked like good evidence, but you realise why the photographs, once you'd examined them properly, didn't add up. And I had one only a few weeks ago of what looked like a Black Panther standing in the middle of a road. in the dark with the car headlights on it. And after he looked at it for a few minutes, he realised what was wrong. There was no eye shine. As it turns out, it was a mock-up, a model, a statue that somebody had set up.
You know, I think hoaxes would make perfect big cat bait, but that's just me. Again and again, there are these stories about big cats going missing in the bush, one or two or four at a time.
A particular story from the 22nd Bombardment Group based at Nil in April of 1942. And that story has that as these American troops were being brought over by air from the Philippines, they had a puma with four cubs that was brought in on a B-17 one night. The puma was there for a few weeks, but was causing a lot of trouble, was, you know, vicious and very unhappy in its cage. Customs ordered these US servicemen to shoot it, and they couldn't bear to, so they talked to Australian servicemen, and they hit on the idea of abandoning it down in... there's two stories. One is they abandoned it in the Grampians. The other story is they abandoned it on the Horsham to Hamilton Road. On the Deakin University puma study in 1977, looked at both of those and found... you know, two separate interviews where they had a very similar story. They thought there was something potentially plausible to that, but that being said, one puma and four cubs doesn't make a breeding population. And I think that's the overwhelming thing with this. Have there been individual big cats loose in the bush? Most definitely. Even quite recently, the Victorian Government Big Cat Report, you know, indicated some that had gotten out of the Bacchus Marsh Lion Safari Park, for example. One had a animal out for about 6 months in that region. That's definitely happened. The million-dollar question, if you like, is there a breeding population?
And that's a very different question to whether or not there's one or two big cats hanging out there.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the big thing is it's not in any way an implausible story. In fact, I think we dodged a bullet in Australia not having populations of exotic... Well, we do have lots of populations of exotic animals, but at least not big ones that eat people.
If we had a breeding population of black leopards... and we didn't find a live one, you'd at least think there'd be a dead one. But Simon says our environment works against us here.
The reason that there are no carcasses of these animals found is they're rare. They're quite rare. They're about, but they're rare. And when they're dying, they don't walk around the paddock and drop dead. I mean, these kangaroos that we've just been looking at, they didn't die here on purpose. They would have been in the scrub when they were dying. These were killed. So the chance, when people will say, oh, why haven't you found a dead one? Well, here, I'll tell you what, pal, go out and you find me a dead rabbit. Well, there's millions of them. They don't last more than a few weeks and they're gone. Mm. Their bones in our acidic soils disintegrate. The vast majority of insects here, ants especially, clean up a carcass in no time. Acid soil destroys the bones. Wind and sand erosion, you name it, stuff doesn't last.
And Simon and I aren't the only ones looking for big cats. The state and federal governments are too.
In Victoria, for political reasons, the previous Liberal government were embarrassed that they'd been put into a position where they had to conduct some sort of investigation and report. And there was only sufficient funds for the people involved, that is Dr. Menkhorst and his assistant, to go through the existing records that they had. And, I mean, that's a crying shame. He wasn't in a position to interview people. There was just not the funds there. I don't like conspiracy theories.
No.
I don't believe this is one. But it's a societal problem. There's a stigma attached to doing something slightly out of the norm. Now, I'm a pretty conservative bloke who has had a lot of responsibility right through my professional career. And I must admit, I can see every time you step out of line or you want to take a slightly different tack, you can get hammered.
Like it or not, there's politics to a big cat hunt. A government spends a lot of money trying to find evidence of a creature that may or may not exist here. Money that could be spent on hospitals or schools. People will get angry.
Where's our track? We might as well follow this one because it's going straight back that way. Yeah.
Cool. God, you have to watch your step, don't you?
No, you do. It's like walking on cornflakes.
Yeah.
Now that people are spreading further and further out, towns surrounding old forests and state parks, we might not see the big cats. But that's not to say they haven't seen us.
That story was produced by Emma Noble with help from supervising producer Kate Montague. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Michael Bryden, and today we're exploring the chimeras of regional Victoria. What happens when the gold rush ends? The people leave, but their buildings remain. After a trip to the old gold mining town of Walhalla and hearing about the apparent ghosts haunting the town, producer Maddie Stutchbury decided to explore what other curiosities lay hidden behind the boarded up doors of Victorian ghost towns, heading off on a journey that saw her chasing dinosaurs and ghosts into the heartland of the goldfields.
It is about 20 past 10 in the morning on a really quite a lovely winter's morning, and I'm walking kind of in a perilous fashion down to the river here in the old gold mining town of Walhalla. I'm going to try and cross the river on these rocks, which might be a dumb idea.
The river that I am standing in flows through a town called Walhalla. The town has only 10 permanent residents and is something of a ghost town. Something I find both beguiling and repellent about an old abandoned town, a once thriving community left to be consumed by the elements. Like dragonflies trapped in amber, ghost towns are a moment, preserved in time.
God, it's nice to just stand by a river. Only hear the river and the water. From where I'm standing, I can't actually see any man-made structures. I could have been standing here for 1,000 years, and you'd never know.
What is it about an empty house that tempts us forth to peer in through the cracked glass and to glance inside? Why do we venture forth and traipse down a path that leads directly into the past? Ghost towns are almost like these living museums, ones that you can crawl around in and experience firsthand. But they're also haunted by the spirit of a community that once was, and in the case of Creswick and Walhalla, haunted by ghosts and by dinosaurs. Standing in a river in Walhalla, I started thinking about what other ghost towns were in the state of Victoria. To the north of Victoria lies the town of Creswick, an old mining community from the Gold Rush. It now survives on tourism, on foodies who travel to the valley for spa weekends and relaxation. My curiosity had been piqued, so I packed up my car, took a microphone and my friend Lockie, and we ventured forth in my little red car, travelling north from Melbourne into the old gold heartland.
It had moving dinosaurs and things in it. They were all made out of paper mache, and you just wandered through. There was barbecue areas, there was activities there, trampolines, etc. But the underlying fact was all of these big dinosaurs.
Yeah, wow. Huge.
Dawn was a woman who was walking on the streets of Creswick when we arrived. She was organising a scout hike, and it just so happens that she has visited Dinosaur World before in the past.
There's nothing there anymore, is there?
No, no. It hasn't been there for quite a while, I don't think.
Mm.
But it was very interesting when we were there. And I can remember we had a camp on dinosaurs, and they had to find the dinosaur eggs. So we hiked up to the dinosaur park and we had a wonderful time in there.
In the centre of town is the Creswick Museum. It's in an old, beautiful heritage building. Lockie and I wandered in to take a look.
long time there were empty shops, but that's not the case now. Tourists are coming in.
Margaret is the secretary and the curator of the Creswick Museum. She spoke to us about the history and heritage of the town, about the gold rush and then the gold crash, about how the town now relies on its literary heritage and on its tourism to get by. And she rather serendipitously gave us directions to where the old dinosaur park was.
I go up to Wisbury Mount and there's a house at Way and What, and that's where the dinosaur park
was. Oh, okay. When did it close?
It was closed before I came here.
12 years ago?
Oh, more than that.
15?
I've been here 20.
I think it was still going, but they closed. It was very much on its last legs, yes. Which is a pity because people liked it and...
Yeah. Well, people still come in and...
Asking questions. Midland Highway, and see what we can find. Literally the only clues we have is that there is an old grey house, and it's off the Midland Highway.
Stretch of highway in rural Victoria with a few sheds on it.
So it should be really easy. Wish it was in a
without a Melways or a map in sight, and without anything specific other than some vague directions we received at a museum. Lockie and I drove up and down the Midland Highway. We pulled into private driveways and sat on the side of the road, glancing at the tiny screens of our iPhones, attempting to find any form of direction to the old dinosaur park.
Goddamn dinosaurs. It's really pretty out here, though. It's like, you know, the Windows, like, screensaver, desktop picture?
Yes! Yeah, it is.
It's that. If only there was some sort of old man, some sort of oracle who would just happen to be around here.
Standing on the side of the road.
Yeah. In the middle of the road. And who said, visit the dinosaur park. I'm sure if we had more time, we could have workshopped that song.
Yeah.
As we drove, I thought about Walhalla. The two towns could not be more different. Whilst they share a gold mining heritage, one lies in the flat open grasslands of the gold mining heartland. The other is tucked away in a lush green valley up in the mountains. Walhalla once had a population of thousands during the mining boom. Now there are only 10 permanent residents, one of which is Brian Brewer. I spoke to Brian at the front of a building that was recreated to look like the old Walhalla Gazette building. Walhalla too, much like Creswick, relies on tourism trade. People come to experience the isolation. There is no phone reception. They're only receiving internet next year. And they were only connected to the electricity grid in the last 20 years. Walhalla doesn't have dinosaurs like Creswick, but it does have ghosts. Actual ghosts haunting the ghost town.
Yeah, well, we started the ghost tours about 15 years ago, met with a bit of hesitation in the town, but now everyone's welcoming it. It's a great way to impart on visitors all the strange and creepy things that's happened in the town, and also just a little bit about the town itself.
Yeah. What sort of strange and creepy things?
Oh, well, there's been everything from murders up here to... people being run over by timber trams, and generally 2 out of 3 ghost tours that we run, someone will get a photo of something, or someone will get tapped on the shoulder or something like that.
You don't have anyone hiding in the bush to
tap
people on the shoulder?
No, we don't.
I feel like she definitely said grey. Like, why else would it be in my brain? I don't want to be, like, too optimistic, but that is a collection of sheds and an old grey house. But there's also a distinct lack of, like, shrubbery. Now, these cars overtaking me give me so much anxiety. Okay, it's definitely a property. That's an old house, though.
Why do they have all those chairs on the porch?
For sitting. I kind of think that the dinosaurs have defeated us.
The dinosaurs are extinct. At last.
I think we can officially... like, it's only been until we've discovered it.
Time of death... 1356 on the 7th of August 2016.
I think it's a very scientific thing of us to say emphatically now that for sure dinosaurs are dead.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
I would.
All right. Home time.
I think I've figured out what it is that I find so beguiling about an empty house. It might have something to do with the absence of life, that aching silence of a township that once was. It's kind of like when you see a model skeleton in the corner of a high school science lab. It's this weird reminder of human fragility, the sickening reality that we are all ephemeral, and that one day we too shall abandon this earth.
Everyone calls it the house, a house where nobody lives. Once it held laughter, once it held dreams, did they throw it away? Did they know? Someone's heart breaks, or that someone did somebody wrong.
That story was by producer Maddie Stutchbury, with supervising producer Selena Shannon.
Well, the pain is all cracked. It was peeled off of the wood. The papers were stacked on the porch with ice.
All the Best is broadcast from FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and Triple R in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Selena Shannon. Our Victorian State Coordinator is Bethany Atkinson-Quinton. Tegan Nichols compiles our show. Our Community Coordinator is Chloe Gillespie. Beck Fari is our SYN Production Manager, and I'm Michael Bryden. All the Best is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can also find our archive at allthebestradio.com, and while you're there, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, but don't open the trapdoor.
Something down there.